What's the history of monogamy and what have the ramifications of it been? We'll find out on this edition of Frank Relationships.
You're listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Yes, as always, those are my babies. Mwah. Thanks for getting Daddy started today. Anthropologist and medical doctor Melvin Connor's with us today, and I'm curious. Dr. Connor, you've asked the question, what if the purpose of love isn't getting people into relationships, but out of them? And I gotta say, the concept is probably appalling to a lot of people, and it's actually intriguing to me. Do you have an answer to that question?
Well, I have a couple of answers. I first came across this when I was just a young teacher, and I put out this paradox to a class, which was, look, falling in love, obviously, a big biological experience, takes over your whole mind, your body, you know, makes you tremble and shake and makes your heart beat fast and all that. Somehow it's built into our biology. And yet, if you look back on the whole of history throughout the world, almost no cultures until recently used that experience of falling in love to create a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Our marriage is created everywhere throughout history. By parents telling their kids who to marry and making deals with other family, extended families, and it was about economics, it was about having children, it wasn't about falling in love.
Mm-hmm. And so, how did that change?
Well, that's a really interesting question. That's a recent historical change. It had to do with, I think, the luxuries associated with modern life, middle class life. It had to do with media, you know, novels about love, and movies, and TV shows, and then rap songs. although they are not always about love, but the popular media brought it into the mainstream, and then everybody said, well, the only way for me to get a wife or a husband is to, or make a long term relationship, is to fall in love. But that was something new. So then, I would ask the class, why did this evolve? We always look at things in my class as an evolutionary perspective. Why did this come about? Why is it part of human nature?
Mm-hmm.
If its purpose is not to create marriages, and this kid came up to me at the end of the class, he said, I don't know, you understand, the purpose of love is not to get you into marriage, it's to get you out of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I said, oh, wow, boy, this is one cynical 19-year-old kid.
Who probably taught you something, got your wheel spinning.
Wow.
So the idea, I think, that he was already thinking about, maybe his parents were divorced, who knows, but that when you're in a bad marital situation, sometimes falling in love with somebody outside helps you break that, make a bridge that allows you to get out of the bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another very important aspect of it, which is the Romeo and Juliet story. And what you have there is the traditional, you know, conflict between a young couple and their parents over who they should marry.
Mm-hmm.
And if you imagine the world throughout history, I don't care if you look at Africa, China, Asia, Europe, throughout most of history, parents were determining who you would marry, just like in Romeo and Juliet. And then what happens? They fall in love, and they, like, throw a tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're familiar with two-year-olds,
I happen to
they
have.
Can throw, you have one. They,
I have
they
five.
Can throw a tantrum that changes your mind about certain things.
Uh-huh.
You know, you you draw a line in the sand sometimes, but sometimes you just knuckle under and give them what they want because mm-hmm. it's so intense. And it doesn't matter that much to you. And I think that's what happens with the Romeo and Juliet story. Now, that has a tragic ending, but I believe that throughout history there have been many Romeo and Juliet stories that had happy endings, that the parents said, you're going to marry that one, and you're going to marry that one, and then the kids said, oh, no, I'm in love with this one. And they threw their little romantic tantrum, and they won.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You mentioned falling in love with someone outside. I assume you're talking about outside of that particular relationship when it's not working. And I wrote a blog some years ago about that, and it was titled "Thank God for Affairs," what it had to do with was many people in marriages or relationships feel like the only way out is if their partner has an affair. Like, that's the only way I would leave that person. And it seems, at some level, it seems absurd. At another level, it's so normal to so many people that I don't want to give it that characterization. But when I heard a story related to that, I just said, wow, thank God for affairs, because it gives people an out. And it's almost like some people might even have an affair to give their partner an out or to give themselves an out. How do you weigh in on that?
Well, I think it depends on the situation. I think it's very hard to, there is such a thing as a marriage that's clear, a relationship that's clearly bad, and is, sometimes it's bad for both people, sometimes it's worse for one than the other. Frequently women are the ones who are more abused in a relationship and taken advantage of. And sometimes romances or an affair is a lifeline.
Mm-hmm.
I remember back in, I think it was the 80s, I saw in the New York Review of Books, which was a pretty hoity-toity kind of a publication,
mm-hmm.
a personal ad in the back pages that said, happily married but looking for more. And it was by a woman who she gave her, I think she was in her 40s or so, I was happily married at the time. I didn't give any more thought to it, but I happened to be looking at the ads of a couple of months later, and there was this ad from, which was obviously from the same woman, and mm-hmm. And she said, against all odds, a connection was made. Mm-hmm. To those who wrote, I wish the same good fortune.
Mm.
This is a great love story in these two little. This was before the internet, but it was like two little tweets,
uh-huh.
very short ads where they charged by the word, mm-hmm.
right.
letter, and a love story. I don't know how it worked out in the end, but human nature is full of mysteries to me after a lifetime of thinking about it, and I got to say that can be a good thing. It could also be a very destructive thing. You know, the mm-hmm. sex is, lust is a dangerous thing. Sex can be a dangerous thing. Extramarital sex can definitely be dangerous in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes marriages survive and sometimes
they don't. Right.
Sometimes it's bad if they survive. Sometimes it's good if they don't, and vice versa. I can give you another, tell you another story. This is from my limited medical experience because I never practiced medicine. I went back to, after medical school, I went back to being a professor.
Mm-hmm.
But one day I was assigned in a hospital in Boston. I was assigned to take the stitches out of a young woman who'd had an appendectomy, and I had done rounds with the with the surgeons, and one of the surgeons in their sort of typical way just blurted out to her that that she turned out to be positive for gonorrhea.
Mm-hmm. Just blurted.
And this was a tremendous shock to her. Trust me when I tell you that this, you know, she was
she 70?
Not beautiful, but rather not gorgeous, but rather nice-looking young woman with probably conventional ideas about her marriage, and obviously her husband had brought this home to her.
Well, she could have got it somewhere.
She was surprised. Frank.
She said, "I'm going to kill him."
Ooh.
And I want to tell you. Nobody ever took out, 16 stitches more slowly than I did that day. And,
call a husband while I'm pulling these stitches.
I just listened to her talk.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, maybe killing him is not the, I didn't think she was really going to kill him, but it seemed like at the beginning of the conversation, it was a tremendous threat to her marriage, and then at the end, she was considering kind of talking to him about it and maybe forgiving him. So that I don't know if that was the right thing, but all I did was slow things down and listen, and I think that is often what happens in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
People accept that their partner has done something disloyal, if you want to call it that. And
would you call it that?
They still think the relationship is worth it.
Mm-hmm. Would you call it disloyal, or what does an anthropologist say about something like that?
Well, I have an anthropology hat, and I have a medical hat, and I have a human hat.
Uh-huh.
And, you do... If you're going to make certain promises when you get married or when you put your life together with someone, then you break the promises. It's something, I think, something to apologize for. If I look at the whole spectrum of human behavior, I see a lot of need for those apologies.
But is fidelity a reasonable promise to make?
Is it a reasonable promise to make? People are different. I think it's a reasonable promise for some people.
It seems to be a reasonable promise for many people to make, just not to keep.
Right.
Many people make the promise.
It's hard to keep. It's promise, I've been to so many weddings, including my own kids, and the promises often don't get kept, mm-hmm. and but they're heartfelt when they're made.
Right.
Ceremonial
most
when
cases, I think that we are we're in a big historical or anthropological transition here. When the divorce rate went from 5% of marriages to 50% in a period of a few decades, and then it sort of leveled off, peaked in the mid-80s, and in the United States, and I felt like, there were a lot of people sounding these terrible alarms, and then my reaction was, there are a lot of reasons to think that this might be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, throughout most of history, if you look at death rates, the phrase "the promise till death do us part" meant, an average of 15 or 20 years.
Right.
So the idea of a 50-year marriage, which we sort of take for granted now, just never happened, mm-hmm. or hardly ever.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got liberated by one of the partners dying, and you get to start over again with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Even so, there was still a lot of extramarital sex, and people differ in that. And you know, in my experience in the among the Kong or Bushmen in southern Africa and Botswana taught me a lot about this,
mm-hmm.
because partly because my late wife, my wife at the time, was in doing research on women's sex lives and love lives. There's a lot of romance. There's more romance that these women experience than, this is a hunting and gathering society, a so-called primitive society, like the one we all came from a long time ago. And they're, you know, there's funny things going on and human things, and everybody's different. Mm-hmm. There were women that she interviewed at length who really seemed like they were just your basic, solid, good wife and mother type who never
had two boyfriends,
much about anybody else. And then there were women who were always on the lookout for a little bit of romance on the side, and mm-hmm. and their husbands may or may not have been the best guys in the world, but one thing we know from our studies and our experience is that that heat of romance has a limited time frame for any couple.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Welcome to Frank Relationships, a show for you, my brethren, who, like me, are too young to be considered old and too old to be considered young. It's also for those who love and support us. We're here to provide weekly wisdom, conversation, and the information that will help create loving and flexible parents and partners. I'm Frank Love, and you can find me, my blog, and my various social media incarnations at franklove.com. If you're listening to the show on Blog Talk Radio, please follow us, and then via iTunes, please subscribe so that you can effortlessly get the show each week. Also, if you're enjoying the show, and of course you are, please give us a favorable iTunes rating, and please share it with your family and friends on your favorite social media platform. We're always looking for new social media friends, so please help us help our communities by spreading the word about the show. Greetings to my super duper co-host, Nancy Goldring.
Hi, Frank.
The consummate generalist. Hello.
Indeed. Hello.
Today's guest is an anthropologist and medical doctor who applies science to human nature and experience. Exploring the links between biology and behavior, medicine and society, and nature and culture. Why do we do what we do? Think what we think. Feel what we feel. And he finds the answers in anthropology, biology, medicine, evolution, the brain, childhood, history, and culture. So, if you, like me, want to know about the history of monogamy, the purpose of love, and the benefits of adolescent pregnancy.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't.
Deep.
Yeah, we'll see where we go with that.
Okay.
Then stay tuned as your Frank Relationship team talks with the author of Women After All, Sex, Evolution, and the End of Male Supremacy.
Preach.
Dr. Melvin Connor. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. And thank you, Nancy.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
I'd like to hear from Nancy a little. I imagine
we're trying to end male supremacy on this show, too.
As Frank's and mine, necessarily.
I promise you she's going to weigh in. Before we get too deep into today's subject matter, we got our In the News segment. Dr. Connor, please don't be bashful. We certainly want your thoughts, too. You got anything for me, Nancy?
Well, wow. Wait a minute. Oh, my goodness. I had it, Frank.
All right. Well,
A couple of things. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I was out on Facebook,
mm-hmm.
right? And caught this thread written by a guy who was basically kind of spilling his like emptying himself emotionally. He had gotten involved with a young woman, and it turns out, at least what I was able to gather, she just wanted a little tryst with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was devastated.
He was older, younger,
I mean, I'm thinking maybe he's somewhere between 32 and 36, uh-huh. and she's maybe 26, maybe not quite 30.
Okay, so he was a guy and she was a young woman. How come he wasn't a young man?
I said they're both young.
You said that after I started to ask questions. But when you introduced him, you said I was reading a post from this guy.
Yeah.
And he was involved with a young woman.
I didn't realize I had made that distinction.
Yeah.
I apologize.
No, what you apologizing for? I just want to know why.
That was completely unconscious on my part. I did not realize I had made the distinction young woman versus guy. Because they're both, to me, young people.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't imagine that he's over 35. And I can't imagine that maybe she's kicking 30 in the butt. But I don't think so. Right?
Mm-hmm.
However, I thought, wow, how the tide has turned. Once upon a time, this was a complaint offered by women. He just wanted to have sex with me. I thought he cared.
I don't think that's just current. I mean, men have been having those issues. I mean, men have feelings. Men want.
What?
Yes. men want.
I'm joking.
They are often the tables can be turned. They have been turned in the past plenty. It's just they don't get the press. But it seems like women are so sensitive compared to men. But men have sensitivities too. They just compare differently. They just show up differently than women. Doc, what do you say?
Well, I agree with you. Frank, that men have feelings too. there's certainly these situations where our usual role expectations are reversed, and sometimes we're naive about that. But there's also such a thing as as human averages, and I think if you go across a cross-section of men and young men and young women, you'll find there's overlap. There's some young women who just want a tryst, but I would say the research shows that there's more young men who just want a tryst.
I would agree
there's
with that.
More
recovery.
Young women who want relationships, and there's not that many young men who really want relationships, or at least they're not in a hurry to get to the relationship stage. And so it's possible to accept that some young women sometimes, or even many, maybe most young women sometimes, are just looking for their fun, and sometimes they're going to run into guys who certainly get more attached to them than the women want.
Wow.
That'll happen. But I think it's more likely to happen in the other direction. So statistically, there are differences between boys and girls and men and women.
Okay. All right. I got one for you.
Okay.
One in five adults secretly access their friends' Facebook accounts.
Secretly?
Yes.
If they're friends, it's no secret.
Well, no.
You mean
I'm
not
talking
with
about
them yet?
I'm not talking about clicking on their friend. I'm not talking about me clicking on you on Facebook. I'm talking about me looking in your phone, or I'm at your house and I look in your computer.
What?
Yes.
Oh man, you get my stuff. Interesting.
I find that to be amazing. Doc, are you on Facebook?
I am, not a daily user exactly, but I do know the ropes. I didn't understand that at first either. Just like Nancy, I I figure, well, they're friends. I have access to their account, but you're sort of talking about the taking over their account.
No, I mean they actually go in their phone and see
something that would be considered private.
Yeah, they go in. So I would pick up Nancy's phone and look
which
in her
I have
phone.
Just moved
yes,
closer to.
I
me.
Was inching towards it.
You know, you're making me grab hold of my phone right here to make sure that
right.
it's still in my pocket.
Yeah.
I won't say I have nothing to hide, but I'm not on Facebook enough. I don't have that much to hide, and the boundaries get pretty fluid these days.
Snooping.
Go ahead.
Snooping is so a lot of people snoop. I mean, according to this, 20% of the population snoops. I mean, in that format, but
given the opportunity,
it's probably more even using the other ways of snooping. Well, I'm
cyber stalking.
And I'm talking about people who are friends or connected,
right,
who supposedly are on the positive side of relating to one another.
Right. I have to admit, I was with a friend of mine's. This was, I don't know.
Male or female?
It's a male.
What were you doing with him?
We were just together for the weekend. We were actually going to this party.
Uh-huh. Right? For the weekend?
I was there for the weekend, but the intention was to go to this party,
uh-huh,
right? Well, I don't know what happened, but he had used his phone. So his phone wasn't locked yet. You know, it hadn't gone black or whatever it does, and
it fell in your lap and you started snooping through
it wasn't quite that not quite like that, right? So not far from that, but not quite like that. So for some reason he leaves the room,
uh-huh,
and I walk over to where his phone is and I'm looking at it and I'm like, I notice a call that he was obviously on with someone that I knew totally about, like this friend of his. And what was more important to me was the time of the call.
Mm-hmm.
And why it was important to me was because he was late picking me up.
Mm.
So, however, he claimed that he was like in hot, like, oh, I was really trying to get here. Da, 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 da. And I was like, well, you must have been on the phone. No, I wasn't.
What was wrong with driving while you're on the phone?
Nothing. Only I knew him well enough to know that he would have called me, and he hadn't.
Mm-hmm.
If he was going to be late, he would have called me, and he hadn't. And so I was like, well, you know, obviously you were on the phone. No, I wasn't. And just that few seconds that I was able to capture in just a quick glance, I could see from the time that was listed that he was on the phone. And I was like, you know, stick with yourself, gold ring. stick with your own noggin. Your intuition was 100% on.
Okay.
And I would have never, first of all, I knew it would be locked.
Mm-hmm.
Like most people's phones are locked.
Okay.
So, and I've never had the inclination to, like, go into someone's stuff. And fortunately for me, as far as I'm concerned, I just walked by. And the information was sitting out there for me to acquire.
Now, but what story did you extract from these
facts?
That
he lied to me.
Okay, and that meant what?
That he was on the phone when he was supposed to be calling me to find out where I was, so I wouldn't have been waiting an hour.
And that meant what?
That I was waiting an hour?
Well, I mean, the fact that he lied, what does that mean? What does that mean in terms of the greater story?
Mm. What does that mean in terms of the greater
Why
story?
Why does that matter?
It certainly mattered to me at the time. It always matters to me.
It sounds like this was like not just a friend, right?
This was a boo. Sound like.
This was a almost boo. So lying when you're trying to be the boo is not cool because it can get you kicked out of the boo category, and that's exactly what happened. So
this is why people check when they're trying to see if they can trust someone.
Yeah, I think that's
gonna
that was
get
more
into
it.
That category or that's in that category. They will step over that snooping line, and sometimes find out something important. You know, one thing that strikes me about that is that whatever conversation he was having,
right,
he couldn't say to the person,
I gotta go.
Or he didn't say to the person, I gotta make a call because I'm late for something. I'll call you right back.
Mm-hmm. Preach. Thank you. That's all I cared about.
All he had to say was that. He could have called you and said, look, dear, I'm really sorry. I'm tied up with something. I'll be 45 minutes late. And then he could have even gone back to that conversation if he wanted to. But it was the kind of conversation where he didn't want to do that.
Exactly.
And so so what? What is
so? Okay.
Okay. Let's say where we are so far.
Where are
he
we?
He was having a conversation with someone on his way to you that he did not want to interrupt to call you and say that he was late. And he didn't want to tell you he was having that conversation. So he told you he was not on the phone.
Period. He was trying to get to me. I'm saying to myself, no. It's just not you. It's just not him.
So what does all of this mean? This means what in the grand scheme of things?
The right answer on the Frank Love Show is nothing. It doesn't mean anything. Okay. However,
no right answer.
Here's the deal. A couple of things. What I'm realizing in this interaction with you is, number one, he could have said, yes, I was. He could have even told me who he was talking to. It wouldn't have made any difference except that I would have been like, okay, I wasn't imagining that. The second thing is, I think I'm always a little more irritated about being lied to because I'm totally relaxed about it now after being on the show. I'm a little more irritated about being lied to when the truth would have worked.
But did you give him, before you kicked him out of the boo category?
He didn't know he was out of the category.
But you knew. But before you kicked him out of the potential boo category, did you say, look, I just want you to know that whether you were on the phone or not, it doesn't really matter to me. If this comes up in the future, you are on the phone, feel free to tell me. I mean, it's I don't have any problem with that.
Typically, he would have, which goes back to what Mel is saying, which was that there must have been someone in particular that he was on the phone with that he wasn't comfortable saying, listen, can you give me 2 minutes? I need to make a quick call. I'll call you right back.
But you already knew that there was somebody. So he wasn't comfortable sharing that for whatever reason.
Right. I don't get that.
I mean, you did know that there was somebody.
Yes.
So
I knew I felt it. I felt that he was on the phone, and I felt I knew exactly who he was talking to, or he would have called me. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, you know, what's the deal? So then to turn around and say he wasn't was just unacceptable.
Okay.
And, well, let's put it this way. It was unacceptable to me because it definitely feeds into what you're saying, Mel, about trust. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, you know, if I can't count on you in a minor situation like this, I got caught up in the conversation and, you know, I kind of got hooked by it and I didn't want to hang up. That to me was totally within the realm of possibility of conversation for he and I. Mm-hmm. That was totally legal. Mm-hmm. And that I couldn't trust him or expect that of him. You know, for me, stuff just starts to get out of hand psychologically. So I'm like, well, what else? You know, how else?
Yeah, I think this is an incredibly interesting conversation. And you know, here's a case where he's doing something that might be wrong, and if it is, it might have big consequences for you, Nancy. Mm. And so you do something that's wrong, a little bit wrong, which is you snoop into his phone, and you might, you might have to admit at the end of that that you shouldn't have done it. But then again, that's not the way it worked out. The way it worked out is you found out something that was really important for you to know, and it was the end of that trust. And so you have. This is the reality, the messy reality of human relations. Nothing is cut and dried. Nothing is simple. Nothing is all right or all wrong. And when we're in relationships, I don't care if you've been married for 50 years or 5 minutes or not even sure if you're ever going to get together. There's a huge amount at stake, and you're jockeying for positions. It's about survival. And if you look the long course of human history and evolution, people didn't always survive by only doing the right thing.
Carla Brunei.
Who?
Carla Brunei always comes up for me in these kinds of conversations.
Well, who is she?
Carla
and what
Brunei
does she say?
Is a former, I think, former supermodel who married the president of France.
Became the first lady.
First lady of France. Yes.
Okay.
So when Sarkozy was president, not the current president, right? So
I don't know anything about
it's okay.
French.
We'll bring you up on international news and history.
Parliament. Last I know
yeah,
about
if
is
you,
Napoleon.
If you Google Carla Brunei, you'll remember all of this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it'll come up for you.
So just click on images, right?
Right.
Okay.
So you know Carla Brunei's story, Doc?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So Carla Brunei was her parents, her mom was married.
Mm-hmm.
Her father was away in the service,
mm-hmm.
and her mom met this man,
mm-hmm.
and she spent, just this rapturous, time with him,
mm-hmm.
and out of that union came Carla Brunei.
Okay,
and I always find myself, kind of twisted up in knots about this whole idea of people having extramarital affairs and how they're wrong and how they're this and how they're that, and I'm thinking, but your kid could be Carla Brunei. And that doesn't mean that Carla Brunei is Mother Teresa, for Christ's sakes.
Uh-huh.
However, that's Carla Brunei. Oh, my goodness.
She was First Lady of France.
Yes.
Okay.
So, I only say that, you could be giving birth to something.
Special.
Intense, yeah.
Well, one of the things that a lot of anthropologists are doing research on is when women decide to go outside their main relationship, and there's actually evidence that when they're ovulating, they go after a more masculine looking kind of a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And more
masculine than what?
Than the guy she's with.
Than their main partner.
What if he's masculine looking?
Well, masculine.
More masculine.
They define it. It's, a strong jaw and broad shoulders and a few other things like that. If you ask women to pick a husband, they tend a little more toward what's called the androgynous, the guy who you wouldn't expect to see
mm-hmm.
on a football field.
Mm-hmm.
If they are choosing somebody to have an affair with, especially if it's at a time when they're ovulating, that's when they pick maybe a little bit more of the bad boy type, you could say, or...
Mm-hmm.
At that moment, they're not looking for a good daddy. They're looking
right.
for they're looking
something
for
else.
Good sperm.
Yeah,
is the theory. Yeah,
interesting.
Okay.
Nancy, you want to weigh in on?
Yeah, so if there's a lot of husbands out there in your audience who are getting nervous right now, sorry about that. Justified.
Yeah, sorry.
It's
nothing we can do about it, but hey.
Oh, my gracious.
Just make sure you're not late and don't have a secret phone.
Right. And then if you have it, it's locked.
One of the things I always go back to is let's say as a child, I learned my Bible stories. If you look at one of the great romances is between King David and Bathsheba.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a nutshell, he's bored. He's standing on the balcony of the palace. He sees her taking a bath. This beautiful woman taking a bath down there somewhere with her servants, and he gets her brought to him, and she's married to one of his loyal lieutenants who's fighting in the war.
Right.
But he has sex with her anyway. And then her husband comes back and he sends the guy back to the most dangerous part of the front.
So he can be killed.
And he is killed.
Yeah.
And then David gets Bathsheba. And what's the outcome?
Oh, my
Well,
God.
A prophet comes and yells at him for a while. And Solomon is the outcome. King Solomon is the baby born out of this, really nasty thing.
Yeah, so to speak. So
it's
it's
kind of like the Carla Brune story on steroids.
On steroids, yes.
And it's in the Bible.
Yes, yes.
I don't know if we're supposed to believe it's a good thing. I mean, the prophet who yells at King David tells him he's going to be punished, and I don't know, the royal house eventually collapses.
Crumbles,
But meanwhile, like you said about Carla Brunet, the result of this adultery is King Saul.
Hmm.
I happen to think we have the opportunity to let this kind of stuff go. When we hold on to a lot related to our partners, we feel like quote unquote infidelity is the golden opportunity to beat you over the head or to castrate you or whatever. But I think it's not necessary. We don't have to carry that level of baggage if our partner does whatever have you, and it's just luggage. It's personal luggage, and it's a way to justify sensitivity, and it is a sensitive issue, and we do have feelings. I get that. I admit it. I'm as human as and jealous, potentially, whatever.
Mm.
And I have feelings that could come up. However, most of us don't even know that there's an opportunity to let that go, to get past it without getting past the relationship.
I'll go one better than that. Most of us don't know that it's a part of the evolution of relationship and that there, correct me if I'm wrong, Mel, that there was a time when a woman could just explore those sexual urges at whatever time they came up. And if she became pregnant and had a child, the whole community, the whole village raised the child.
Mm-hmm.
And the child, there was no preoccupation with whose baby it was. So this woman had a child. All of us are going to participate in taking care of it. And none of the men were tripping.
Yeah, well, here's where culture comes in, Nancy. I mean, there are cultures that are just like what you said.
Okay.
Even more so, there's this group of cultures in the Amazon basin. Amazonian Indian traditionally had this thing called the technical terms partible paternity, which really means shared paternity.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So a woman would have sex with a number of different men, or at least several different men. And the belief system was that a baby could not develop normally in the womb without those contributions from the different men.
Mm-hmm.
So they had no knowledge of what we know about the science of how sperm and egg get together and what's one father and one mother and so on. They thought that, and traditionally some of them still think that you got to have several fathers.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that these guys were on good terms with each other in those cultures, and they counted on each other because they, you know, could get killed in fights or wars or hunting expeditions. And they knew that there was another guy or two or three other guys who also considered themselves the father of the child. And I was going to be there to take care of the child when they were killed.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of one extreme. And at the other extreme, you have a lot of cultures where, you know, men absolutely are obsessed with control of wombs, of uteruses.
Mm-hmm.
Their daughters, their sisters, their mother, their, you know, everybody, the wives especially. And they these are the cultures where women are kept in seclusion, where they're not allowed to go out without a male escort or without being draped from head to toe in coverings. And these guys, these are cultures where guys are you know, the opposite of the shared paternity thing. They're 100% determined to make sure that they knew who the father was,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and there was only going to be one of them.
Right.
And then the rest of the world is in between those extremes, and then there's room for individual expression and room for marriages in which men don't feel their masculinity that challenged by what their wives might do with somebody else, and other marriages where they do, but you know, to say that, well, just I'll be cool with it. I mean, remember the story I told about the young woman in the hospital whose husband brought gonorrhea
right
back to her. That's treatable. What about the easily treatable? What about the many women who whose husbands brought or boyfriends brought them HIV/AIDS or syphilis or without their even knowing it, get, you know, chlamydia, which gave them infertility. So there's dangers here. There's also the lawyers call the alienating the affections.
Mm-hmm.
So either sex can say, well, I can tolerate that. But then what happens if the new relationship is not just a tryst or a passing fancy or a few times in a hotel, but it turns into
a real
bond
deal
that takes that person who's so important to you away from you.
Mm.
But that can happen. I mean, I have a few answers to that. Number one, that can happen with any kind of interaction with someone, not just sexual. And on top of that, there's in the spectrum of love that I like to look at and play with, I want for her what she wants for her. You know, you want to be with somebody else, that's what I want you to do. And
Frank.
Hmm.
You need to see a movie called Cloud Nine.
Okay. And I suppose we'll talk about it after I see it.
You need to see it.
I'm trying to remember that. I'm thinking of Love Potion number 9.
No, Cloud Nine's a foreign film.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you need to see that. You know, it helped me to get clear that there's no end to this. You know, you think, get to a certain age, you get your head together, you get your life together, and you stop tripping.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you stop thinking about men and women and you stop doing all that.
Uh-huh.
See Cloud Nine.
All right.
Get back
to
me.
Well, I think that I've reached the age where, you know, I turned 70 over the summer, and I'm not over it, believe me, but I'm more or less in the look but don't touch stage when it comes to, you know, women other than my wife. Part of it is aging, the aging of hormones. Part of it is just learning to value the relationship that I have so much that I, you know, I still want to look. I still want my fantasies.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to take big chances that might turn my life upside down. And
got it. Yeah.
Make it impossible for me to go home and have a nice evening with my favorite person.
I got a quick story I wanna share, related to kind of the possession of the uterus and that sort of thing.
Okay.
There was a book, mind you, my favorite fictional author is Mario Puzo.
Oh, all right.
And funny enough,
I like him too.
Yeah, funny enough, his best.
I didn't expect to, but I did.
Yeah, he was great. And his best book to me wasn't even The Godfather. It was a book called The Fourth K. It was about a fictitious Kennedy president.
Okay.
Anyway, that's not even a book I'm talking about. But
okay.
Puzo says that the first organized crime family was the Pope, a Pope called and I think his last name was Borgia.
Yes, absolutely.
And
those were some pretty nasty people.
Vicious clan.
There was he wrote a book on them called The Family.
Okay.
And in this book, he has two sons. One of his sons is muscle. He's the muscle.
Yes.
He has two sons and a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
He feels so strongly about the daughter and her sexual something. I don't even know what I want to call it, but he feels so strongly about the daughter having loyalty to a man outside of his family
mm-hmm.
that he has his son have sex with her first. Like he asked his son to be her first sexual experience.
Yes.
That's how deep it can run.
He was one of her sexual experiences too, wasn't
he? Was that? That wasn't in that book.
Oh,
The Family.
Okay.
But I don't know historically. I mean, who knows what
happened.
But in this book, the son.
I think that's accurate, actually. The son. The situation with the son.
All right.
In other words, with his own sister.
Yes.
He wanted her first sexual experience to be with her brother, so that she's giving that part, which she can only do one time.
Right.
She can only do it one time.
Keep it in the family.
She can only do it the first time, one time.
Right.
Keep it in the family. Exactly.
Wow.
It's deep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So, and that can run so deep in so many different ways. And so
you're saying that was not just some sexual deviance on their part. They actually had a belief system that was consistent with keeping a certain quality of power in the family, and he felt his young daughter possessed a certain quality of power, and he didn't want to give that away.
Yeah, I hate to be a professor again, but in ancient Egypt, brother sister marriages in the royal lines were
common or not unheard of,
and that is. I don't know, the same impulse, keep it in the family, and, you know, nobody else is good enough for us and so on. I don't know how it worked out genetically in the long run, but, one of the things I always want to say as an anthropologist, if you look at the whole world and all the cultures of history, you pretty much see everything
that you
can think of. But that doesn't mean that everything is good for everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you look over the whole world, you see, and over history, you see a lot of what's called social monogamy, which means people publicly committing themselves to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they sometimes, you know, strayed mm-hmm. privately,
mm-hmm.
and that too is part of human. It's part of human nature. The whole variety is part of human nature. Mm-hmm. But the reason, to me, the reason it doesn't add up to anything goes for everybody, is that you see patterns that are consistent and more common than others, and something like loyalty is real, and maybe marriage starts out with an arrangement and by parents. Maybe it starts out with romance. Either way, it turns in the best case it turns into a good friendship, and that can be worth a lot. And I think that's what people have discovered over the centuries. The one thing I would say, you know, as we talked before about the rise in the divorce rate, I think we're moving away from a pattern where everybody is forced to conform to a monogamous ideal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is fine.
Mm-hmm. What do you say about...
I don't think that everybody, that monogamy is right for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I think that the monogamous ideal should not be imposed on people. It should be available. People should have choices.
So you're a big fan of the whole polyamory movement?
I'm not a big fan of that. My son is a big fan of it.
I'm checking in. I'm running out of time. I got to plug it. You know, I got to get it.
Yeah,
so.
No, it's okay. My son told me recently that he thinks it's a sexual orientation.
Polyamory?
Wow.
Yeah.
He's right.
So, you know, when it was a philosophy, I was allowed to argue with him about it.
But now that it's a sexual
orientation.
You can't argue with that.
Right. I can't tell somebody not to be gay, and I can't tell somebody not to be polyamorous.
Right.
Even if he's my own son. So, on the one hand, I've seen people hurt.
Yeah.
Right.
And I don't think it's impossible to do it in a way that works, but I also think it can be very hurtful.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Not everybody is on the same page.
Right.
God, there's so much. Mm. I could chop it up with you, Doc.
Another hour.
There's so much to talk about.
Yeah.
I didn't talk about half of what I wanted to talk about, but anyway.
Well, call me again sometime. We'll get into some more of the little alleyways that go off in strange directions.
I like that promise.
You're listening to Frank Relationships, and we've been talking with the author of Women After All, Sex, Evolution, and the End of Male Supremacy, Dr. Melvin Connor. Dr. Connor, please tell us what you're up to and how we can find you.
Well, you can find me at... MelvinConnor.com.
Spell that for me. Spell Connor.
I'm writing regular column about once a month for the Wall Street Journal. My forthcoming one this weekend is going to be on women's sexuality and why it's very different from men's. Not that I'm that much of an expert, but I do interview some women who are experts.
Okay.
I'm trying to always teach about and understand human nature and in some way that will enable and write about it in some way that will enable my students, my readers to look into themselves without all the blinders of their upbringing and society and maybe religion on, and see things more broadly and more open-mindedly.
Nice. And that's Melvin, M-E-L-V-I-N, Connor, K-O-N-N-E-R, for our listeners who want to check out your website.
Oh, and you can follow me on Twitter, @ Tangled Wing.
Tangled
Wing.
Title
of my first book, @ Tangled Wing.
Mm.
Tangled Wing, as in birds flapping their wings.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Along today's journey, we've discussed the history of monogamy, David and Bathsheba, and just monogamy, polygamy, we were all over the place.
Polyamory.
That's the one we really. All right. Thank you to my co-host, Nancy. You got something to say?
I'm letting it go, Frank. All right,
thank you. All right, we got it.
Thank you, Nancy. Thank you, Frank. I enjoyed this greatly.
Thank
you. Awesome. Thank you. Yes.
Thanks to Jeff Newman, my engineer, and thank you to my guest, Dr. Melvin Connor. You've been great. I hope you've had as much fun as I've had hanging out with today's ensemble. As always, it's my wish for you to walk away from this conversation with a heaping helping of useful information that'll help you create a relationship that's as loving and accepting as possible. Let us know what you thought of today's show at Facebook.com/RelationshipFLove, on Twitter at Mr., that's M-R Frank Love, or at franklove.com. If you're listening via Blog Talk Radio, make sure you like us there, and if via iTunes, make sure you subscribe so that you can receive each week's show. This is Frank Love.